No, I'm...
Oh, boy. The light, it's flashing red and everything.
It's flashing. It's recording. Ooh. Two things. I'm still finishing my beef jerky, even though I was criticizing you before we started for eating. And also, I just farted.
Perfect.
And I just locked the windows closed, so...
Is that part of the show?
That's the whole theme, yeah. The whole theme is... It's fart. It's called Fart Box.
Yeah.
Broadcasting legend Matt Michaelis.
Okay. We're gonna start right there. All right.
Woo! So we're driving to your... You and I have a long history.
Yeah.
Which we've probably relitigated on this or many of my other attempts at podcasts.
Sure.
You wrote for a website of mine.
Yeah.
We both went to KGRG.
Yeah.
We both took the broadcasting, or we both went to Green River. We both took the broadcasting program with KGRG. You turned it into one of your careers.
Mm-hmm.
I turned it into a money pit that is podcasting.
Very good.
Probably helped with other stuff. Like I've certainly benefited in comedy, knowing how to like. Well, this is actually kind of what I want to, one of the things I want to talk about is, you and I both go to KGRG, and the head of the program at the time, maybe still, you know better than I do, was Evans Krause.
He's since retired.
All right, congrats, Tom.
Great in his retirement, so he can, you know, focus on his career, his baseball career with the Puget Sound Senior Baseball League.
I played in the old Puget Sound Senior Baseball League.
Really?
Yeah, it was, I think that's charging, It was cool. It's like a really amazing program. I got too enthusiastic my very first practice and like really fucked my shoulder up.
Oh, nice.
And then spent two seasons trying to like make it work. And then I was like, my shoulder was already not in great shape when I started.
Yeah.
But I went I was so enthusiastic to throw batting practice that I threw like 150 pitches the first, which is a bad choice.
I think they're going to tell you that's a no-no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Major League pitchers, they don't even let them go over 100 anymore.
I know. Well, we had this dude, Josh Ledgard, who's probably still in the league. He was like 40 at the time.
Ugh.
And he would literally, he's like a, not an IT guy, like a web developer.
Yep.
Really sharp dude, but he's one of these guys that you look at him and you learn everything you can about him and you're like, this guy has got to be just the worst athlete in the world. There's no... And he was like, he wasn't like a guy that was like throwing heat, but he was like probably high 70s, low 80s. And
I say for me, that's...
Well,
that's
you
all, that's
you can't hit it, but
no.
I'm talking about baseball players.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was in the intermediate league. There's three divisions at the youngest level,
uh-huh.
And I was in the middle one. But he would pitch like 100 something pitches, and then 2 days later would pitch 100 something pitches.
Jeez.
And he's like one of these guys that must just have like that genetic shoulder that like the old pitchers used to have that they could just pitch. They were like, you know, pitching complete games twice a week, three times a week. But so Tom Krause, great dude.
Mm-hmm.
I will say my experience with him was great, but I like more seminal to my broadcasting experience was Charlie Harger. Who
sure.
is still there or not there anymore?
So he moved on from Como a couple of years ago. I think he's over at Cairo now.
Well, no, I mean at KGRG.
But he's not teaching any longer, I don't believe. Yeah, I don't think he's involved in the radio program. They kind of left the program at the same time there at Green River.
Gotcha.
But, yeah.
So he was awesome. He's it was cool also to have like Tom had been in radio many years prior, but
mm-hmm.
but like Charlie was...
And had all the stories.
Yeah.
All the stories.
Charlie was an active radio reporter.
Yeah.
It still is.
Still is.
He won, a radio Emmy or something.
A Soundy?
I think it was a national thing for interviewing Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer.
Oh, boy.
Many years ago. He actually made the mistake of putting me on his... radio show a couple times, like, or his reporting segments.
Were you newsworthy?
It was like I was not as newsworthy as Gary Ridgway.
Uh-huh.
I was giving commentary on sports, basically.
Gotcha.
So But the guy, a guy that I think you have talked about and a guy that meant a lot to me also, even though I would say I probably didn't get along with him very well and only took one class from him, but Jim Campman.
Oh, Campy.
Campy, who...
You didn't get along with Campy?
Campy was he was a curmudgeon.
What? Campy was awesome.
Yeah, listen, I'm a curmudgeon. Just because I don't get along with someone doesn't mean I don't think they're great. I'm telling you that he was... I learned more about, like, editing in his class than any other class.
The thing about Campy is he taught you to just take convention and throw it completely out the window. Like, the rest of our classes were about learning how to broadcast. And then... What Campy's classes were about is just taking all that and just throwing it in the garbage and setting it on fire.
The class I took from him was like truly just an editing class.
Yeah, production.
That's
the class I took too.
Okay, I remember him telling this story. Was that the only class he taught?
I think it was production. Yeah.
Gotcha. So the stories he was telling us were like basically he was putting in a demo to do, like... The thing about Campy was he treated radio like show business.
Yeah.
Different than Tom and Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was, like, unapologetically, like, yes, I work part-time at Taco Time. I am, you know, I do, like, this kind of, like, voiceover stuff, like voice tracking for radio.
Yep.
I teach this class, and it's like, got to make ends meet, got a family to feed. And that's like a part of radio that you rarely get to, you get like, I mean, that's what most people are doing, but that's what it rarely gets glorified, right? So Campy was like this guy with a long storied radio career and was also a cautionary tale.
Yeah, no, for sure. His lessons were just all about, look, be creative, be you, you know, and everything. I took a lot of that. You know, a lot of what I learned from him and the unconventional parts of radio and what you can do with things, I think I took just as much out of those lessons as I did from, you know, from any of the other radio lessons. See, just because, you know, it's true, especially nowadays when everybody's a content creator.
I thought you were not putting ents on the end of that word. I thought you were saying everyone is a C word. And I was like, oh my God. I said curmudgeon, not that word.
They really are, you know, these days. No. Everybody's a content creator, and so you don't have to have the conventional sound or the conventional look to be a broadcaster anymore. It's just, you know, what can you, you know, is what you have to say interesting? Are you presenting it in a way that people want to listen to? So, you know, those are lessons I think that are being learned now and taught now and that are prudent now. When back in, you know, 2011, 2012, when I took his class, maybe that wasn't the case yet. So he was kind of at the forefront of that. He was on the cutting edge.
He said a thing that I think about all the time because I've, like, taken it into kind of, like, my negotiating style with jobs, which is he was negotiating to do, like, some, I want to say it was, like, truly, like, Vietnamese expat radio or something like that. Yeah. Like, it would be only in Vietnam. It's, like, a very small market of people. And I was like, well, what are you going to ask for? And he's like, I'm going to take whatever they offer because what I'm going to try to do is next year when I renegotiate the contract, I will be the voice of Vietnam expat radio or whatever. And I was like, that's kind of an interesting thing. Another thing I learned in those broadcasting classes is, because you did this process where you like eat shit as an intern for a while.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I have COVID. You're gonna die.
I was better off with the farts.
That's not true. My farts have certainly caused more heartache than COVID per capita. I never could afford to be an intern. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, because to be an intern, you always had to be, like, on the morning show.
Mm-hmm.
I was always working full-time, taking full-time classes. And I should have done it. I should have just figured out a way to, like, do it. But I was, like, I was also, like, accustomed to... I was living as an adult. A lot of people, you were, too. You were, you were like, 53 when you went to college.
Yeah.
But, like, there, when you're 18 and you're living with your parents, it doesn't matter how much money you make.
Sure.
Because you don't have to pay rent. You don't have to, like, cover your car insurance right. or whatever. And when I was taking classes, it was like, no, I gotta, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
It's, there's no, so I was like taking, I worked in the morning. I worked in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And there's not very many internships that are, like, valuable and also, like, go hang out with the night board up, you know?
Right. No, and it's hard. I mean, that's why it's a hard industry to get into. And any time where, you know, you have an industry that's relying on free labor, you know, it's there's going to be a certain sect of society that can't participate, which is...
Yeah, the rich whites like you get to do it. And then
No. No, I am neither of those things, no. But I did have help. Yeah. From the GI Bill, so...
Sure, for sure. You know. No, that's a... So I've kind of...
But what's that... But then, I mean, not to get too societal and all that, but what does that say? That you have to go... You know, in order to go through a process to where you're able to afford an internship, you have to go and put your life on the line and spend 8 years
to be able to afford to work for free, you have to... Yeah, it's fucking crazy.
You have to go and have people literally shoot at you like I did.
Right. And, And yeah, so like I viewed those internships as a thing where I was like, if I could do that, I would, because I know that's the way. Like, but I can't,
yeah.
So I won't.
Yeah.
But when I got into comedy, that concept of like, I remember Charlie Harger specifically said, you don't know, like, you don't know what is going to be the thing that gets you the job, right? Like,
sure.
If you're a radio guy, but you know how to do like, You're like a broadcasting guy, but you can do like computer IT shit.
Right.
Maybe that's like that. You're like, well, that's the tiebreaker. You never know what it's gonna be.
Mm-hmm.
And then like when I got into comedy, like knowing how to do audio editing, and knowing how to do audio production, and then knowing how to do live audio stuff because I've like, you know, fucked around with it enough.
Sure.
That was literally like the first club spots I got. I helped the club owner set up a podcast.
Yeah.
And then He like booked me. He's like, well, you want to do this weekend? I really appreciate this.
Oh, that's great.
And the other thing is, very often people would be like, can I pay you? And I'm like, no, I will do it for free. Just like keep me in mind. And you know, you do enough of those things. Most people never follow up, but enough, you do it enough times, enough of them do. And I've always heard this, or not always heard, I've heard this saying that's work for free or full price, but never for cheap.
That sounds about right.
That's what I believe is make people like either earn goodwill or the amount of money you deserve.
Well, I did a lot for free in the radio. So, I mean, the lesson I talked about, the lesson I learned from Campy, the biggest lesson I learned from Tom were just the three words, never say no. So, you know, I mean, those first few years in radio, I was doing everything I could. You know, being paid, I guess it was being paid, so it was the working for cheap option.
That's actually anybody.
It led to opportunities, though.
Anybody early in your career, I think, whether it's radio or what. Like, I used to do, the way, I didn't graduate, I don't have a degree, but I, like, taught myself how to do, like, coding and fucking, learned about, like, lean manufacturing. I was doing, like, and I was doing work that nobody wanted to do.
Sure.
And that's, like, yeah, of course. Like, Make yourself valuable and indispensable. Which I believe these are probably books that, Making Yourself Indispensable sounds like a book we would have read in a radio class, but,
If not, you should write it.
No, the book exists for sure. I know only the title, but that's the, that kind of shit, like, I wasn't even thinking about a comedy career at that point, but I learned so much stuff that I apply to my comedy career from those classes because it's like a similar creative, similarly sought after thing where it's like, it's also a thing where you're like, and radio is this way too, where there's like, there's 500 people that want this job. You got to do every single thing you can to make yourself stand out.
No, 100%.
And some of that's like not being a piece of shit, which people are bad at sometimes.
That helps. That can help.
Well, usually that's like it cuts half the candidates out, you know? It's like, this person is... So I always hear these stories about comedians that are, like, frustrated because they haven't been booked by someone, and I identify with that completely. Like, I've experienced that so many times, but I started doing comedy at a time when I was mature enough that I'd be like, well, what's the best tactically, what's the best thing I can do right now? What's the best thing for me? Will this person ever book me if I go, why the fuck haven't you booked me? Like, you fucking book all these pieces of shit and you don't book me. Of course I say that to my wife about that person, or right. I say it to my friends about that person, but I don't like saying that to their face, and especially when you bring up other people that you think suck. Now you're like involving, you're going to make it three or four people dislike you, you know?
Well, you, I mean, you don't do it, so you don't do it like if you're in the Northwest. I mean, okay, here's how you don't do it if you don't have an accent. Like, let's say you're in Boston. You're like, hey, you fucking booked this fucking guy, why didn't you book me, motherfucker? Then it's fine. Like, you can get away with that.
I don't think
and
so.
And you know here. What, it would actually probably do you a favor.
Not in this comedy scene.
But not out here.
Having that accent, they assume that you're racist. Like, we can't book you anyway. I know a couple guys with New England accents that sound like fucking Peter Griffin. I think they come off as abrasive the whole time.
And that's the point. That's the point.
Even when they don't want to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's like... So, Charlie Harger also... told me a thing that I think about a lot, or I've thought about a lot, and now it's like nobody has been more prophetic than Charlie. He was like, radio is not competing with like satellite radio or CDs or MP3 players. It's your phone. We will eventually have radio, something that's better than radio on the phone. And it was like, this is like predates podcasts. Mm-hmm. It's like, and it doesn't really, probably doesn't actually fully predate podcasts, but it predates when there was like an easy way to listen to podcasts on your phone.
Right.
And nobody's been more right than that. Like he was completely accurate that we were gonna, like, radio is gonna lose to your phone eventually. It's already probably has lost, and it's just like guys my dad's age that are like, my dad will never listen to a podcast. My dad never consumed a podcast of mine until I put it on YouTube, of all things.
Well, I read an article just the other day. So, the new cars that they're making, they're not including AM radio. So the AM radio band is not included.
Whoa.
So, you just don't even have that option anymore for getting a new car. Yeah, so, I mean, it's absolutely right. Now, you know, most stations that broadcast, you can find them through your phone, right? You can listen on an app or whatever it is, but so that traditional broadcast medium is going away, at least on the AM side. I'm sure it'll be that way probably in FM too, but you know but then it evolves, and you know, the desire, I firmly believe that the desire for live radio entertainment, and you can put radio in quotation marks,
because,
okay, maybe it's not coming through, you know, a traditional radio, but it's still radio, right? So I think that that's always going to be there.
By the way, like, I think, like, the Jack FMs of the world, or, like, the music channels, they're way more fucked than political talk, sports talk, you know what I mean? Like,
right, because everything's a Spotify playlist now.
Right.
Or, yeah.
I mean, dude, you and I were at KGRG. I think I was there maybe before you, actually. I think I was there a year or two before. We never crossed paths there.
No.
But I think you were there a year or two after me. Because you must have been, because Mark Burkhart, friend of the podcast, Mark Burkhart, introduced me to you. And he was doing something there.
Gotcha.
And I used to do a morning show there with Mark Burkhart, which was just a fucking disaster.
Mark, I love Mark. Mark's good people.
Yeah, Mark's... Yeah, I mean, don't call me Mark, but I do like you when I see you. And I'm just joking. I used to see Mark a lot, and now he's got to be 75 years old now.
He's got that Troy Polamalu hair.
I know, and he's a Steelers fan, which is the most frustrating.
That's what I'm saying. I think he actually modeled his hair after Troy Polamalu. He's like, I'm just going to do this.
It's a wig, actually.
Yeah, it's what it is. I ran into him at Meadow Park Golf Course.
That's right, he golfs. Yeah. I always forget he golfs because he's...
Better than me.
He's like one of the worst... Looks like one of the worst athletes you've ever encountered.
But he can play.
That's good.
He can play some steak.
He was also a guy that was like... He was... I mean, it feels like 50. I guess he was probably 40
Sure.
when I met him. and going through a divorce. He was like the classic older college person, like, or he was like needed a career change, and he was going through like a life crisis.
God,
once one time, we had a mutual friend at the radio station, and we had like been texting Mark, and then he just stopped texting for a couple days, and we went and searched like, where does he go? We like searched, like, we like got, you know, drove around looking for his car.
Yeah.
And he was in, he had gotten a DUI on Friday night. And I'm, you know, maybe I got pled down. If you're employing Mark Burkhart, first off, I think you're not testing for anything, but if DUI is part of it, I'm lying. This story is completely fabricated. Don't fire Mark Burkhart.
That's probably odd. And don't they expunge that stuff after like 7 years? No, maybe not. Maybe not that. I don't know.
I've never had one, so try not to get one today.
Yeah, knock on wood.
When I was there, I remember taking the class, a summer class with Charlie Harger in like that big lecture hall.
Oh yeah.
And there was like a black couple that was in the class, and he said a thing that I've thought about, like, because of you a lot.
The N-word.
Yeah, he said it a whole bunch. I can't stop thinking
just
about
like
it.
Charlie.
I know. Charlie Harga.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
He was talking about how, like, broadcasting has just so few people of color, so few black people in particular,
sure,
that are in it. And he was like, basically to these folks, like, if this is something you're serious about, you should really pursue it, because there are opportunities. Like, this is before, like, a lot of the stuff that we, like, the DEI stuff that is going on now. But it was, like, you know, the early stages of it where people were saying, like, you have a real opportunity. I have no idea who these people were, if they ever continued to do broadcasting. They were, like, in their early 30s, I think, kind of.
It was actually Oprah.
Yeah, it was Oprah and Stedman, I think.
Stedman's black?
Is Stedman even real, or is he just Gayle King in a power suit? I don't know. I've never seen Stedman. We should pull this up at some point. But did he say that when you were going there?
I don't remember him saying that to me. You know, I only had him for one class.
Hate Charlie, dude.
I love Charlie. What are you talking about? I love Charlie. Wow. Charlie's the best.
I think I took only two classes from him. I took most of my classes from Tom.
It was just the AM, you know, because there are two radio stations at Green River, the FM, the AM, and he taught the AM, and so it was really more of a podcasting class, kind of how it is now. So
yeah, that's they didn't even have a podcasting class when I did it. We did voice tracking.
Yeah.
So like,
I guess that's what it was, or the precursor to podcast. So yeah,
you'd basically get like a playlist of songs, and you'd be like, oh, that's you know, whatever from the fucking Mamas and the Papas, and
great ad lib.
Yeah, well, there was a song, because, well, this is the other thing about that station, the music was so far out of my range of taste.
Well, sure.
There was like, I found bands
you,
that I still.
What about me?
Dude, I bet you that I listen to more hip hop than you. That's my guess.
Well, that's fine, but they don't. I mean, I listen to a lot of stuff.
Right.
But nothing they play there.
I don't. Yeah, I don't. I listen to fucking.
All of a sudden, I walk in there. It's like the first time. And they're like, let me crank this up so you guys can really feel the music. All of a sudden.
Yeah. I found some bands that I like, though, that were.
Yeah, we found some. You know what? There were a couple local bands that were great that are in the rotation there. And we actually, when I was working on the morning show there, we had them up and everything. One was Peace Mercutio, which is they're no longer together, but they were a great local pop punk band. And then another one was Poor Sport. Those guys were fun.
Poor Sport, I've heard that before. I didn't know that was a band.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We gotta get these guys to make us a song for the Poor Sports podcast.
Boy, absolutely. Oh, you have to.
I did not know this was a band.
Poor Sport, yeah.
Actually, Poor Sports Podcast is a name. It's all a podcast about that band. It's not. there was Authority Zero was a bit. Mad Caddies. When I said Mamas and the Papas, I was trying to pull the name. There's a song called Vampire Lake. Okay. And I can't remember the name of the band, but they had like a couple songs on KGRG that were in heavy rotation. And they were. So when we were there, there was So there was a lady named Brittany Murray was the program director, and I was the editor-in-chief of the newspaper, and her and I would try to, we would like trade stories about who had the shittier job. And she eventually quit.
So I guess she won.
She did win. And then somebody, Mark might have been the program director at some point, but there was a music director was this dude named John Swanky, who is, I still am in contact with. He actually knew my wife in high school.
Yeah.
But he would had a lot of influence over the new bands that would come in. And then they used to have a show called The Basement.
Oh, The Basement is still going.
Is it? Is Mark still involved in it?
I'm pretty sure Mark's still involved. Chris Lear.
Yes.
Chris
Lear. We would go by involved. Satan. That was when I met him. His radio name was Satan, which is funny. Oh, that's cool.
Which might be the second most badass radio name of KGRG. Number one will always be Killing Spree.
That's a wild one for today's
Killing Spree.
Time.
And it's funny.
How old's that guy now?
Jesus. He's got to be like 50.
Do you remember?
What's funny is he goes by Killing Spree. It's like the most soft spoken, chilled.
Well, he doesn't look like it, though. He looks like he would go on a Killing Spree.
Oh, God, yeah.
There was a dude when I went there that was friends with Chris Lear named Blind Fury.
Oh, yeah, Blind Fury. Blind Fury, I don't know if he still does, but he worked at iHeart for many, many, many years.
Okay. He was, so he's legally blind and like not faking it. You know, there's people who are legally blind and
like, No. Like, Fury would, the sister that we use, Next Gen, you know, for the music and everything, I didn't even know this, but there's an option to, like, expand. So, you know how, like, your parents, like, with their iPhone, the older they are, the bigger the font is. So, like, you know, if your parents are 70, when you look at a text message, like, one little text message bubble takes up the entire screen, and Blind Fury did that with Next Gen, and so, like, every button on the button bar was, like, five times the size. It's like, oh, so if it was left like that, like, oh, Fury was here.
I would walk in, and I'd see him. I'm going to tell you a story. You don't need to ruin your potential future there. I'm going to tell you stories about when I was there.
Okay.
So you'd walk in, and he'd be, like, literally, like, his eyebrows are touching the computer screen.
Right. Oh, yeah, he was, like, right up, nose to screen.
We had this morning show, Mark and I, and then whoever did, like, the late night show was, we were friends with. I can't remember who it was. And maybe it was just one night a week late night show, but they very often we would come in, and the background on that second studio would be, like, a micro penis on the background or something like that, like something insane, which is like, we were in the middle of the like gay bro play. The peak of gay bro play was like the like late aughts. And we were in, we were really doing it, you know? What was I getting to? What was my point with that? Oh, Blind Fury, there's so many of these funny names that are like these, like Satan, Chris Lear Satan is just like a sweet dude from Kent, Washington.
No, it's, look, there is nothing, and this isn't a hyperbole, there is nothing like college radio. It is so much fun.
Yeah.
It is so depraved.
Well, so you didn't even get to use the, because my first year there.
Yeah.
We didn't have the Next Gen thing. It was like putting CDs in.
Oh yeah, no.
So you'd have to have two different. You'd have to pot up one, and you'd manually fade it to bring in the other song.
Every once in a while, you know, we would use CDs, just kind of depending on what we were trying to do. But most of it, was loaded into Next Gen. So, but that's how I got. That's how I really got my job. So when I interned, and I had only been at KGRG for like 6 months or so, but when I interned at KJR, they use all the same systems that we use at KGRG. They use Next Gen, they use Adobe Audition. So I came in knowing how to do everything.
Right.
And 3 days into my internship, the producer of the morning show quit. He was just out. And so I was, as an intern, basically producing the morning show.
Right.
I was doing everything audio-wise. I was using these systems. I even, ran the board. So, as an intern.
Right.
So that's, I used that to get my foot in the door and eventually get hired.
Yeah. So that's, I'm going to tell another story about those early days with the CDs. So that's the nice thing about what you're saying, I think a good endorsement for the KGRG program is,
oh, yeah,
you get to use, because very often in an industry that's that competitive, mm-hmm, they're like, we want 5 years of experience with this software, but the only way you can get access to that software is to get a job.
Right.
And the only way you can get a job is to have experience with the software. You right. know what I mean? It's like this constant predicament people find themselves in.
Sure.
So, when the nice thing when we went to the next gen thing, because I used to smoke cigarettes at the time, is you'd have to be like, if you were in the middle of a shift, an on-air shift, you're like, well, I got to put on the longest fucking song, sprint downstairs, yes, smoke a cigarette as fast as I can, run back up, hope that song has not stopped. And, or you'd have, like, if someone was in the studio, can you please put the next song in, you know? And that the next gen thing would, like, run it like a playlist, right?
You just run it through, yeah.
Yeah, but another thing, because of that, because it's, like, so tedious and boring, I was doing an overnight shift one time. Because that was, like, one of the hazing things that you had to do when you started. You had to do these overnight shifts.
Yeah.
And I was doing, like, a 12 to... it must have been, like... It was, like, 8 to midnight shift,
yeah,
on 4th of July weekend. And I get there, and I'm, like, nobody's on campus. And I'm, like... I brought 2 fucking tall cans of Budweiser with me. I'll never
this be. Wasn't when I was program director, was it?
No, of course not. No, you were. We hadn't met.
Yeah, that's right.
But I also there was a. So these two. I was 21.
Yeah.
I'm like drinking in the studio, and two girls from the class show up, and I'm like, oh fuck. And they come in and they're like, are you drinking in here? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, you're gonna have to share, and like, or like, or we're gonna have a problem. And I was like, okay. So I had 2 tall cans with me. They split a tall can, you know, nice, like a big 24 ounce Budweiser. Oh, yeah. But also, like, it made me it was one of those moments where I realized how long I could have been getting away with drinking in public, because like the security guard came and I was just like, you know, hey, how's it going? Like, you know, we didn't open the door. He's not going to come in while I'm on the air. Right?
Right.
So he comes and I like immediately make it look like I'm on air, so he won't come in. I was like, oh, this is, I could have been drinking in public for years. And I was not.
I never did that.
But of course you didn't. Cause no, you want to work there.
I had a future ahead of me. But when I was program director, so you get this little office, and in the office there's a couch inside of my office. So I mean, I don't even know. I mean, downtown Auburn, you know, it gets pretty lively, and there were many nights where I would just end up in my office, like on the weekend, I would just pour into my office and just pass out on the couch, just dead ass drunk. Yeah.
What, did you live in Federal Way at the time?
Yeah, I lived in Federal Way.
Gotcha.
Part of the time. I guess, no, most of the time I was there, I actually lived not too far from the radio station, but
okay,
definitely farther than I needed to be going. So, yeah, so I would just go up there and just pass out dead drunk.
Let's ignore the fact that this occurred before Uber was in Washington State.
Right, right.
You definitely called a cab, waited for it to arrive.
You know, it was a different time.
It was a different generation.
Different area.
I actually remember a story about you, too.
Story about me?
Yeah, you told it to me.
Oh.
But it was, there was like a stretch of time where there was like an ice storm.
Oh, God.
And you basically were on the air, I think, for like 72 straight hours.
It was like a blizzard.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, I was the program director, so it's my job to make sure we're on the air.
Yeah.
You can't have dead air. You got to take... So you have to... Like, the FCC... So what people may not understand about college radio, or at least how it is, it's if it's on the radio band, like, the radio station has to be registered with the FCC. It is an actual working radio station.
Right.
Subject to fines and all of it.
And shut down.
Right. Now, how regulated it actually is, I mean, I feel like maybe they make a bigger deal out of things than really is the case.
Sure.
But it's also to prepare you for, you know, the real world. So,
right.
But, so you can't have dead air. The legal ID, which, you know, when you hear radio broadcasts, they're like, hey, now we have to spot, you know, pause for station identification. That's a legal thing they have to do at the top of every hour. They have to give their legal call letters.
What's the thing you had to record in the book?
And then you have to record. So your transmitted levels, this is really getting into the weeds of radio, but the transmitted levels, the radio waves you're putting out, have to be within, legally, a certain range of frequency.
Which, by the way, what's funny about that is it's not like we had any control where we could, like, adjust the frequency.
Right.
You're just taking the record.
Right.
So not to cut off this incredibly interesting thing about radio that we're talking about.
I'm sure everybody's thrilled to hear this.
But I never had heard of an army shower.
Oh, yeah.
Until you, because you were like, explain an army shower.
Yeah, GI shower. Yeah, you know, you just hit the priorities and just kind of drive on, you know?
No, I want an in-depth description, because I'm going to have to do one before the show later. By the way, we're driving to a comedy show. Matt's never been on a comedy road trip, which most people haven't. They're very boring.
Well, I hope not, if people are listening to this.
Well, this is somewhat fun.
Until I got into the radio stuff.
Yeah, you really fucked it up with that. But I'm saying, like, a comedy road trip.
Yeah.
You think it's going to be, like, cocaine and strippers, and we're going to play golf. I'm going to drink coffee at 9 p.m. You're going to probably fall asleep on the drive back.
Nice.
It's like a 15-hour day for me to do 45 minutes on stage.
Perfect.
And, you know, it's 300 miles from home, or not quite that. It's like 200.
Is there an option for cocaine and strippers? We got to drive back, so maybe not so much the cocaine.
You'll have to... I mean, I think the cocaine might help the drive back.
True.
I think the strippers have more of a... No, I'm not going to eat on this. I was giving you shit. I was about to take a bite of beef jerky. What the fuck?
Dude, what are you doing? You learned nothing from Charlie Harger? Eating while on the air?
Charlie Harger taught me this exact thing. He actually created this whole
he
setup.
He set this whole setup up. Yeah. All right. So you have to write down every hour these things, the meter readings in the book.
No, I want an army shower detail, not the fucking stupid log.
I can incorporate it into my story. So I'm the program director. I have to make sure all this shit's happening. So I knew the weather forecast. I knew a blizzard was coming. And if anybody's ever been to Green River in Auburn, it is up on a hill. It's on Lee Hill.
Yep.
There's no way in and there's no way out. So I got a backpack full of supplies, and for a community college student, supplies meant Totino's pizzas, which, by the way, are definitely supposed to be done in the oven, but, you know, we have a microwave, whatever.
Were they the pizza rolls or the full pizza?
No, the pizzas.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah. And, like, as much Lay's sour cream and onion potato chips as I could cram into a bag. And I went up there, and
so
I was
you
there.
Have a thing with Lay's sour cream and onion potato chips and broadcasting. You have to do those things together.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's why you were doing it here. That's why you were doing it then.
I have a thing for Lay's sour cream and onion potato chips.
We can tell, buddy.
For doing anything, because they're just the best. Especially if you dip them in the salsa con queso, you know, from Tostitos.
You're the only person with that combination. That's the most disgusting combination of chips I've ever heard of in my life.
Have you tried it?
No, but
then
it's...
Then don't fucking talk about it. You don't fucking know.
Listen, folks, weigh in. Folks, weigh in.
Lay's sour cream and onion potato chips.
This is the clip for the podcast. We need... We're going to have you... We're doing the poll.
The medium salsa con queso from Tostitos. It is the best combination there is. I promise you.
You are a white guy from Oregon, secretly.
I am not. I'm one of those things.
You're just Oregon white trash.
My parents are white. It's not my fault. So 72 hours I was in that radio station. And, yeah, you know what? You know, you want to get clean, so you just kind of take a rag. And I guess I would have used, we had the little pump soap action. And you just kind of find a rag or a towel. I mean, I probably used the rag we used to clean the whiteboard. And you just kind of, you know, you hit the pits and the nether regions and just kind of...
Penis. He's talking about his penis and his balls.
He's soldier on.
We don't have the FCC looking at us right now.
nobody wants you to be talking about my penis and balls out there. Nobody wants that.
That's actually the theme of the podcast. This whole podcast.
Is your penis and balls, maybe.
It's this is a Matt Mikolas' penis and balls.
Nobody wants to hear about the Franks and beans, you know. Twig and Giggleberry.
So yeah, I've used that in years since then. I've been in a situation where I stink.
Yeah.
And if I can reduce it by 75% by wetting some paper towels and rubbing my armpits,
there you go.
I do it because that's like the epicenter of my stink personally. Yeah. It's from my armpits.
Yeah.
It gets real bad. What was the? There was one other thing I wanted to talk about at that radio. Oh, so did you ever do? I did play-by-play for Enumclaw High School football.
Nice.
I don't know if the program continued after I left or not. It was did you ever know a guy named Pete Richmeyer?
No.
So Pete Richmeyer was, I think he still does some, like, well, I don't know what he does now. He was still doing somewhat recently. He went on to do play-by-play stuff for the Lingerie Football League.
Nice.
Which I think became, it stayed LFL.
No, Legends Football
League. Legends Football League. Legends of Lingerie Football League.
I think it's just Legends Football League.
Legends of Ladies Wearing Lingerie Football League.
Yeah, it's just made the change. Very politically correct now.
What was very funny is, so him and a guy named Tony, I can't remember Tony's last name, they were like both like former like strip club DJs. I actually, Pete Richmeyer's stepdad was a dude named Paul Dade,
mm-hmm.
who was a, so Pete is like a, he's a white trash guy.
The semi just almost crashed into the other semi.
Yeah, that was pretty wild.
That was intense.
Oh, it is this oversized load. That's rough.
Let me hit the gas, my friend. Come on now.
I think he might be full blast on the gas right now.
I hope so. Doesn't look like it.
So Pete Richmeyer is a classic white trash white guy. Not in a bad way.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he was like kind of a, just a white dude, like ordinary white dude. His dad, Paul Dade, was this black guy that played baseball for the Cleveland, his stepdad, played baseball for the Cleveland Indians at the time. He had a nickname that was like the Executioner.
Oh.
And I worked with him at a box factory years later. He didn't have a long baseball career, obviously. And he's actually passed away a couple years ago. Really sweet guy. One of the best shit talkers I've ever met in my life, Paul Dade. But I weirdly worked with his stepson. And at this, we did Enumclaw High School football. These two guys were like, I think strip club DJs, something nice. Like that.
Tony. Next up on the main stage, Cinnamon.
Yeah. So it's,
thank you, Diamond.
It's us doing that. And I did a radio show with Tony at the, and then, yeah, I was doing a radio show with him at the station when I started dating my wife, actually, because I remember every time I'd go visit her, he's like, did you let you fuck her? And I was like, nah, man. And, and then at some point I stopped doing it so I could go visit her. But anyways, I quit radio. That was the last time I did radio was this Tony guy. God, I gotta figure out what his last name is.
Last time we did radio was when he realized it will absolutely not get you laid.
I don't think it was the radio that was stopping
me. Yeah, I promise you it wasn't helping.
I have one of my high school best friends worked for the, among other things, the Danny Bonaducci show.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever that thing was called.
Yeah.
And he got some real dishonorable partners through radio. Like,
I believe that. Danny has a certain type of following.
But this guy worked for somebody else before that. I can't remember who the show was. But he was in radio for, so he was at KGRG like 4 years before me or 3 years before me.
Yeah.
And man, where did he work? He worked at, like, The Wolf, maybe, as, like, a board op. He was a board op for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then started doing, like, some kind of production stuff. He would go to these, like, you know, radio is a wild, wild thing because it's usually a lot of relatively young people.
Yeah.
And I think I would say on average, it's either late bloomers or unattractive people that, like...
It's a very D&D crowd.
It's way more than... Yeah, that's the... I was trying to describe this to somebody yesterday, and I used D&D as a thing, where it's like, inside of radio, you can be a swinging dick, but if you were... Most of the people, if they were at, like, a sports bar, they'd be the biggest nerd in that sports bar.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Which you wouldn't think, but, I mean, it's just kind of how it... kind of how it is.
Yeah, it's always like the, like when, did you grow up, were you aware of Tom Likas?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
oh.
There was somebody that I had talked to that I was surprised didn't know
was
about
I
Tom
Was I aware of Tom? Dad? You mean Dad? Oh, I want to talk to Tom!
There's a comic named James Adomian who does an absolutely incredible Tom Likas impression. We'll listen to it after.
Yeah, I want to hear that. God, I loved, and this just shows what a piece of shit I used to be.
We all were.
I loved Tom Likas.
Likas,
I
loved that. Dump that bitch.
Dump that bitch.
How are you doing,
it's
Tom?
It's Thursday, and you're tuned in to Likas 101.
How are you doing, Tom?
Do you care?
Yeah. But so anyways, you hear this guy with, like, this incredibly, like, dynamic voice, and then you'd see him, and you're like, oh, he looks like, he's like a fat turd. You know, like, this guy's only getting laid off radio.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he was, like, I think on his third or fourth marriage then. He's now, like, what I also like, too, about him is his show, it starts, like, the show that's hosted not by a right-wing wacko or a convicted felon.
No!
So it's, like, Rush Limbaugh.
I am your host, yeah.
And then another guy who I don't remember who it was. But I'm, like, in today's climate. So, Likas, I looked him up because I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
He has become, like, he's moved left with the world. But in today's climate, the radio he was doing would be, like, right-wing radio.
Yeah, I guess.
Dude, because, it's like...
Well, yeah. I mean, because it would kind of fall, I guess, more in the category of like a Barstool.
It's like a Barstool conservative, yeah.
So, yeah, I would
I'm not saying he was right-wing.
Right.
The whole, like, spectrum thing is fucked up now, where it's like the like... If you look at the quote-unquote right-wing, like, Barstool conservatives and evangelical Christians have very little in common, but we have to flatten people down to their place on the spectrum, so it's that, you know.
Sure.
Anyways. And
well,
also,
radio is all about demographics anyway.
Sure. And he was pulling in a bunch of perverted, like, late 20, like, 16 to 35-year-old men.
Me! It was fucking me!
Me too. I remember driving, my baseball coach would listen to it on the way to games.
Yeah.
And it would be Flash Friday, and we never got anyone to Flash. It was so disappointing.
Oh, I never got one Flash on a Flash Friday.
Yeah, it was if you had your headlights on, people were supposed to flash you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, my wife. She would ride around with her dad in the car all the time. They would listen to Tom Likas.
I was not quite sure where that was going to go.
My wife was out there flashing on Flash Friday. Still to this day, actually.
Yeah, she just
sees a pair of headlights and she's got
to
show
honor the god. You know when it really got fucked up was when people's headlights started to come on automatically anytime they were driving.
Yeah,
they're like, why do I see all these titties?
I thought that's what it was going to turn into.
Why does my week
I just thought everybody just started driving around topless. Now that the lights are always on, but...
Anyway, though, the...
1-800-5800-TOM. 1-800-5800-866.
I can't wait to listen to the James Adomian impression with you.
Nice.
I know what the last thing I want to talk to you about is, because... So you're like recently no longer doing radio. Don't want to talk about that. I'm not trying to get into any of that, but I do remember. So your last stretch of radio is like the 2020. You were in 2021, right?
Yeah.
So the George Floyd event happens. You're doing sports radio all through Colin Kaepernick's controversy.
Sure.
I remember very specifically. You posted something about Kaepernick, and you and I are, I think, have the exact same opinion on Colin Kaepernick, which is, find a new country. No.
I found on eBay, I have an I'm with Cap jersey now, matter of fact.
Oh, wow.
Which, if you had told me in, like, 2012, if you had told me in 2012 that I would be, like, happy that I got a Colin Kaepernick jersey.
I know. Well, it's funny. The funny thing about Kaepernick, to, like, briefly go on an aside, is I think his like, effect on this modern civil rights movement has been, or social justice movement or whatever has been incredible. And it's almost like the best thing he did and got the right people in his corner was to just mostly shut the fuck up. Because before all this, he was kind of a doofus. Like, he was kind of considered to be, like, a dummy. And, and I think, like, that doesn't...
And he kind of is.
Right, that's what I'm saying, is, like, I think that he's absolutely handled all of it perfectly, is to speak up, like, to pick his spots.
Yeah.
Instead of being, like, one of these... Because inevitably what happens with these folks is they have to weigh in on every fucking topic, and they eventually will contradict themselves.
Sure.
Because we're human beings, and, you know, we're all fucking flawed and hypocritical and all that stuff. And he just, like, you know, picks his spots. And there's stuff about that he's, like, there's things, points he's made that I disagree with sometimes. But I think, like, overall, he's an incredible steward for his movement.
Yeah.
And, but a lot of people, like, to me, the thing about him that's, I can understand people, there are, like, Robin DiAngelo, I think, she's got problems, in my opinion. Not to start this argument, but I, like, there's reasons to dislike Robin DiAngelo. To me, the Colin Kaepernick thing was, like, this guy is peacefully protesting. He took advice from a veteran on how to do it. Yeah. And by the way, that kind of gets under, one thing is, Nate Boyer, right, was like, he did say, I'd prefer you didn't do this.
Right.
But if you're going to do it, this is a better way. And then when he started taking a knee instead of sitting during the national anthem for a couple weeks, then it finally became a thing.
Sure.
He ends up not being able to play in the NFL after that and wins a collusion case against the NFL. Like, there is no doubt, legally, he was colluded against. That's the, like, and so... But I remember you posting something about it, and my very specific memory is somebody going, like, he's fine, but the guy needs a haircut. His head looks like an eraser because he has a big afro.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's just, like, the level of familiarity that people have with you because you were on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, by the way, do you remember, well, we'll talk about this one in a moment, because I have this weird worlds colliding thing that happened with you also that you don't, we haven't talked about. It might not even be a good enough story for the podcast. but sports radio is truly like a cross section of the Puget Sound area politically, or probably actually is a slightly more conservative, I would guess, than the average person in the Seattle metro area.
Sure.
How much fucked up shit did you have to deal with in that regard? On, like, 'cause you had, like, you guys taking calls, it's harder. But you guys, you worked in radio in the time when, like, text and social media was a big thing.
No, I mean, you'd get it, you know, every once in a while. It wasn't so bad. I mean, it was bad. It was bad enough that, like, well, I was kind of careful. I really didn't want to put anything out there, like, social media wise that would, like tag my wife in or anything, just because I didn't want her to have to see any of it.
Right.
Because not that it happened a ton, but anything that did happen, I just didn't want her to have to go through and see. So I was, and even now I'm still kind of really careful about that. But yeah, I mean, you're going to get it. I mean, if you're a somewhat public figure, I always, you know, joked that, you know, I was a J-list celebrity in the Seattle area. More, actually, even more in the South. I was probably up to, like F-list in the South End. Yeah, look, hey.
That's three letters.
253, man. The South End is, that's slick hot country down there, you know?
Gotcha.
So, but, you get it, but... I mean, you just kind of know that you're going to deal with that. I don't assign any weight to it. There's no weight behind it, you know?
So, are you talking about, like, explicitly racist things?
Sure.
But how often do you get stuff that you're like, oh my God, this is annoying? That, like the thing that person said about Colin Kaepernick's hair, I wouldn't call explicitly racist.
Oh, I would. That's explicitly racist.
He's trying to be funny. I think there's a thing, like, using a racial slur is a lot different than him going, like, this guy needs a haircut. It's, like, ignorant, dumb,
Yeah, there's a spectrum.
It's the ignorant version of racism, not the hateful version of racism. I assume you got a little bit of the hateful version on.
Yeah, I got a little bit of that. But right. I mean, you get, look, and a lot of it's from, you know, well-meaning, well-intentioned people, too.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm talking about.
I call it Get Out racism.
Sure.
You know, for anybody who's seen the movie Get Out, if you
actually
have it, watch it.
Because I'm too racist to watch it. So.
You need to watch Get Out, for sure. For sure, and then you'll know what I'm talking about. But yeah, it's Get Out racism. And, you know, there's a lot of that in the Northwest, because I think most people in the Northwest are pretty well-intentioned.
Right.
But in that, and that's what the movie's about, in that, you know, there are microaggressions, and there are... It only goes so far, and it's just... So, yeah
I'm often definitely. Very critical of the Northwest, because the Northwest thinks that they are significantly more progressive than they actually are, because these places where racism has actually been litigated, like the South, while there's, I think, probably per capita, the people are more racist, these people live in the same neighborhood.
Right.
Where in Seattle proper, like... You could go... Seattle has whatever its black population is, but they mostly live in, like, Rainier Valley.
Yeah.
In, the poorest parts of town. There's an enormous economic divide, and it leads to segregation.
And here's... in the South, places like that, like, you know, there are those feelings of hatred versus up here where there's really not much of that, and everybody wants to do the right... Not everybody, but most people... want to do the right thing, but that's just it. They kind of go out of their way to try and do the right thing, and then it ends up just being more awkward.
But the right,
I'll take awkward over violent any day. So
of course, but that also, like, to be fair, like, violence of that type in the South is rare now. It still occurs, but it's like, it's our country up until like a couple years ago had been on a long time trend of reduced violence.
Sure.
I don't love this driving situation here.
No, like, that's fine.
Could I see a line on the left-hand side of the road? That would be nice.
Yeah, I need that. Just hug the one on the right side.
Good. That's what the other guys are doing, too. So we'll touch mirrors in the middle.
And they're alive.
I guess I had this experience going to Atlanta where my friend, like, lives in a neighborhood it's a suburb. It's, like, a very nice part of Gwinnett County.
This is when the
it's yeah.
The Dick Size story happened in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's all
one of my favorite cases.
I will be telling it tonight. Yes.
Which ending?
Well, we'll see. It depends. It depends. A town like Pasco gets the director's cut. They get every part of it because they're not sensitive about it all.
Well, I just remember because. My wife and I have, you know, seen you a couple times or whatever. I just remember my wife pulling me aside after whatever. She said, Casey changed the ending to that Atlanta joke. I said, yeah, she said, it's probably a good thing.
Oh, no, it's all time dependent, usually. No, the part that she hated is in the joke still. It just depends on if I have time to tell that part or not.
Right.
Because it's got a couple big pops in it that it can end on. And it also depends on what I think the crowd's appetite for the last half of that joke is.
Oh, cool. So how much they're fiending for racism. Excellent.
I think that part, the end of it is, I mean, by the way, that story is like the least embellished joke I have. That's like everything in that joke.
That's what happened.
Well, yeah, where I said, the things that I said, are the things that I said. The things that my friend said are, that one is, anyway. His neighborhood, my friend's neighborhood in Atlanta, he's black. It's a suburb. It's a great fucking neighborhood. 100% minority suburb, basically. Mm. I mean, I'm sure there were white families there, but it was like mostly black and Hispanic families. And that does not exist in Seattle.
Sure.
Like, and there are parts of Georgia, parts of Alabama, where there's like not... This area that we live in is very segregated. And so that leads to, my perception is, white liberals not actually ever listening to what minorities want and trying to project their own guess on what minorities want.
Right.
Or the only minorities they see are like the most hyper-liberal, middle-class, white-collar IT employees or whatever, you know what I mean? So, like, a really common example is that Latinx thing, where, like, the intention was good-ish, but they were never like, hey, do you want to use this term for yourselves?
Right.
They were just like, this is what you're called now. Enjoy. And that sucks. Another example is, like, in the district that George Floyd was killed in, they were like, here's a defund the police bill, assuming it would pass, and they would just, like, completely restructure policing.
Right.
It failed.
Yeah.
In the district George Floyd was killed in, which is, my understanding is, like, a very, like, predominantly black district of
right.
Minneapolis, it failed, because that is not what, on average, polling would suggest black people want. But white people are like, well, let's take the police out. That, you know, let's not listen to what these people want. Let's just do what, like, we think is what they want.
Right.
What we want them to want. You know what I mean?
For sure. Well, you know, the quick solution. That's what, you know. But what'll appease them and shut them up?
I think that's the thing is, like, we don't even, like, a lot of times people will have these, like, what they believe are, like, progressive opinions up here, but they never actually have to encounter the people they think they're advocating for.
Yeah.
So it's
that,
like,
makes sense, yeah.
It's like, I almost view it as, like, white people who live in Seattle proper, for them, working class black people are like a theory, not a real, like, it's not, it's like an idea more than it is like a group of people.
No, I can see that, at least in some extent. I think most people want to believe that they are well intentioned and believe that they, you know, it's very much what they want to not see color.
Sure.
They want to not see color, and they want to proudly, hey, it's not refined. I don't see color. I don't care, because they don't care that I'm black. But you also
fit an aesthetic that they like. That's the
sure,
problem.
Sure. Well,
it's like
sure.
They don't want. I always say, like, the rules for race, like the rules for how we're supposed to handle race, they have to also work for, like, a homophobic black forklift driver in Denver, because he represents some portion of, like, black people are not a monolith, and some of that means, like, this idea that black people are all virtuous,
right,
is wrong,
right,
like, they're just as flawed as anyone else, right, like,
right.
That's, and so, yeah, it's always like, yeah, it always just annoys me. White liberals annoy me a lot, is what I would say.
Well, you live in a great place. You must have a hell of a time.
I came by it honestly. I was white liberals are not a theory for me, right? Like, they are something I consider myself pretty liberal. I said off the podcast, I'm like a classical liberal or a small L libertarian, not libertarian party. I don't know what those guys are doing, but I sometimes, man, especially in comedy, because it's all lunatics, there's a lot of just, like, misplaced efforts that are, like, where people also feel morally superior. Like the defund the police thing.
Sure,
right?
Sure. Yeah, you know, I typically will, you know, I try to see the intention behind whatever somebody's word directions are, and then just kind of go from there. You know, so it's you know, the Northwest is pleasant enough. You know
sure.
what I mean? It's pleasant enough. And like I said, I'll take that over over hatred any day.
You wore a shirt on Instagram that said you were at a Mariners game and it said rooting for everybody black.
Yeah.
And
quite a few different comments on that.
Yeah. Well, see, this is the thing, too, that, like, I mean, I found nothing offensive about the shirt, but the moment I saw it, I was like, well, the people are going to hate this. There's going to be people that hate this. Like,
yeah, and I just don't care. Well,
and to some degree, a shirt like that, like, when you buy it and put it on,
yeah,
you know it's going to create.
Right.
So you may not be wearing it for that, but you're wearing it with the full knowledge that you're going to create some friction with
sure.
some people, and I definitely admire and identify with not giving a shit if you lose fans over something. You know right. what I mean? Like, yeah. I had people tell me, like, you got to stop talking about Colin Kaepernick on your podcast. And I'm like, including, like, co-hosts. And I was like, I mean, the dude, first off, he's in the news again. I'm not doing it because I just, like, am obsessed with him. He's in the news again. And I think, like, what he's doing, despite being, like, a dumb jock in a lot of ways, right. is incredibly important. And it's, like, exactly, like, what he did is what people claim they like, is, like, nonviolent protest.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing, you know, because every protest that turns violent or there's, you know, looting or things burned to the ground and everybody's like, well, see?
Right.
And then you have Colin Kaepernick, who is taking a knee while a song's being played.
Right.
It's the most innocuous form of protest that can have an impact that there is. And that's seemingly more upsetting to a lot of people than even the violent protest. So right. it's like, how do you want us to say this? And the answer is you don't. You just don't. You just want us to shut up. You don't want us to say it.
Right.
You don't. And God forbid it be put in front of your eyes during your entertainment time
yeah.
as these athletes who you feel ownership over because you pay to watch their product.
Right.
And so you feel that ownership of them. And God forbid that they put on this spectacle or display in your mind that is taking away from what you are in your mind again, paying them to do, which sure. is entertain you.
To me, it's like, I think the thing that subconsciously people are feeling is it takes away from, like, the kind of innocence of sports. But to me, it would be like if, because it's now, like, it gets harder and harder every year to root, like, to watch the NFL
mm-hmm.
as a moral person, right?
Right.
Because you're like, these guys are gonna, like, you know, these guys are experiencing trauma that will follow them through life,
sure.
many of them. And it would be like going like, well, stop talking about concussions. You know, mm-hmm. we're sick of hearing about concussions. Stop suing the league about, you know, it's like,
yeah.
these are like real things. But here's another good example, though, of like the NFL. A couple years ago, the NFL made a big thing about how they were going to start fining and flagging players for using the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, who is that going to affect? Like, what problem are you solving? There's like Richie Incognito and a bunch of black dudes using the... That's no, but this was before Richie Incognito's thing.
Oh, okay.
I believe. It was not a response to Richie Incognito in my memory. But people were like, yeah, stop people from using that word. And I'm like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's not even a, like a... What are those called? Not unintended consequences, but like unforeseen consequences. It's a foreseen consequence.
Sure.
You're going to be penalizing black players way more if you actually enforce this, you know?
Oh, yeah, but that, are you kidding me? Why people are foaming at the mouth for that?
Nah.
You know what? The N-word.
I don't think that the people who thought
the N-word is one of the biggest bugaboos to white people that there is.
But the people that I saw who were supporting that, who were happy about that going into effect, were not white conservatives. It was white liberals who were like, yes, we have to get this word out of the game. But it was like, very obviously, the people using it the most often in a football game, you would fucking hope, are the black players and not the white players.
It's white people and the N-word. It is, I mean, you want to talk about just dripping with jealousy.
It was our word first.
There is a word.
It was our word first, man.
There is a word that y'all can't say. Y'all can't have, and we can do whatever the fuck we want with it, and you can't say shit. Well, you can say shit about it, you can't do nothing about it, and society will motherfuck you if you do use it, and it's delicious.
But again, like,
it bothers so many people.
But again, you're completely right on that.
And I'm
but
like,
that's.
And I'm not,
but hold on though. Let a white guy tell you about the N-word,
please.
Man. No, so you're completely right about what you're saying about, like, some people want to use it, they want to be able to use it, and I understand their reasoning. Obviously, I think it's misguided, but that's not what was happening with this. What was happening with this was people were like happy that the league was putting in this rule because they're so ignorant to football and sports and like male relationships that they thought there were just like white dudes in a predominantly black locker room using the N-word constantly, and that's who was going to be stopped, and not black dudes talking to each other or to other people on the team or other people on opposing teams that were going to get penalized for this.
But I just want to make it a blanket thing. But my question back to white people, why?
All right, I'm here to represent white people.
White person. Why do you want to use it? Why?
Because
so many people are so upset.
Do you want to know the real reason?
Why do you want?
So there's two versions of this. One is
I'm not talking about like the super racist people.
No, the reason white people want to use it is because black people make it look so fun. I'm not even kidding. That's why, because it's like a perfect dude is the white guy equivalent, and it has none of the same like it's like dude is like a Smirnoff Ice, where the N-word is like a fine whiskey. You know what I mean? Like it's got like some like smokiness and some stank to it. There's no word.
You can really, I mean, you can
motherfucker.
Relate,
I can get there to motherfucker
you
a little.
Can't
bit.
Relate it to the F word.
Which F word?
Fuck.
Okay, I was gonna say.
You can kind of relate it to that because there's so many uses. You can emphasize things. You can make it dope.
Yeah, I think you can say like motherfucker.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's because, and it's like in every like I'm. I grew up in the 90s listening to hip-hop. Like, I was obsessed with fucking hip-hop growing up. Mm-hmm. It's in every fucking song. Like, it's every one of my favorite music artists uses it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And the reason is, like...
Don't you fucking use it, though.
I know. Black people, you made it look too fun. That's the problem.
You know what it is? Probably is fun. I don't use it myself.
Yeah,
No, but it is, you know, it does look fun. You know what doesn't look fun? All the bullshit that the black people had to encounter. Because surrounded by that word.
Of course.
So if you, hey, white people, if you want to go through the centuries of racism, slavery, segregation, and fighting for the rights to be an American and a human and not have to have, you know, fire hoses and dogs turned on you and everything. If you want to go through all the struggle that black people have gone through in this country and around the world, you go through all that as a people for, you know, 300 years, and then you can use that word.
But I have to do all that
and you'll
hope
be so happy. You'll be so happy you get to use that word.
I have to do all that, and I have to hope that Kanye is still relevant at the end of that 300 years. All right, we got to end the podcast. We're gonna go. We're gonna.